Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go hook him up!
Of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Oh, not much. Just enjoying the beautiful weather here in the Seattle area. And welcome back to the show, Ed.
Cool. Thank you very much. And we got our other co-host on the line. What's going on, Couture?
Not much.
Not much as always. Hey, Couture, did you guys set a record for a heat? On a Sunday?
I don't know. I didn't go outside.
I didn't go outside either because we set a record here in San Antonio this past Sunday. It was 112 fucking degrees.
Yeah. I'm glad it's September. We need to get to November and December.
Yesterday I was hanging out with Barb. We're walking her dog. And we're talking about how it's 96 degrees and it feels fucking awesome. I mean, that's how bad it is. It's been that we're happy that it was just fucking 96 degrees. But, yeah, hopefully, usually it doesn't really cool down until, like, the end of October, November. But,
yeah,
you know, thank God it's coming to an end. That's all I can say.
I was on the back porch yesterday around 5:30 barbecuing some pork steaks. Tank top, shorts, loving life. About 72, 73 degrees. It's great.
Yeah. But, Craig, I gotta ask you a question. Do you feel like somewhat insulted or pissed off that your good buddy Rodney chose not to stay with you this weekend in Seattle?
No, not a bit.
You're not upset that he chose to stay with Brian instead of your guest room that you promised would always be there for him?
No, it's cool. I have no problems. Brian's got extra rooms, and I have to blow up an air mattress for him when he comes here. So
well,
good on him.
I'm sure it was all the life size cutouts of Eddie Vedder that scared him off.
There's no life size cutouts of Eddie Vedder. They're
Okay, maybe the neighbors are playing because they saw a black man in the neighborhood.
We don't get none of them around here in Puyallup. Yeah. No. He stayed in my shrine, a.k.a. the office, and I had to blow up the air mattress. And, you know, I don't want my friends, you know, sleeping on a twin bed that, you know, my son has soiled years ago. So, you know, it's all good. In fact, as soon as I get off the telephone with you gents, I'm going to drive quickly up to Tukwila to have some a bite to eat with the crew here in a little bit. So, kind of excited.
Are you going to drink a Manhattan with Granny and Rodney?
I don't drink, Ed, so no. Do they make virgin Manhattans? What's in a Manhattan?
I don't know, but I know it's pretty complicated because you have to like grind shit up in the fucking glass. So
I see.
It's a pretty weird drink, but anyway. I am a little upset with Ronnie for not taking me there. You know, he could have sprung for the trip. He could have took me down.
No,
he knows
please.
I've been down the last couple of weeks, but no, he fucking left me here by myself and went up there by himself.
You know, it's funny because he got the duck out of Fodge really, really quick because there's a big storm hitting Louisiana right now.
Oh, yeah, he told me that. He's worried he might not even be able to go home. Well, actually, I'm pretty happy about that.
Well, yeah, so you should be glad he's not staying at your place, Greg. You might have the house guest that never left.
That's why I didn't let Ed stay when he came.
Well, I was cast down to stay at Vinny's house. But, that was cool. I mean, that the age in the house was probably about 100 years, but it was still cool.
You guys didn't play checkers on his gaming rug that he had?
No, when I saw that. I also saw like a big ass animal head in the fucking basement, and oh, I know it was actually a cool house. I mean, actually, it was pretty cool, but my God, was that house old?
Yeah. Yeah. What mine lacks in space, you know, which is not a whole lot, but updated, millions of years ahead of him.
Yeah. But have you seen Ronnie before today, or is this the first time you've seen him?
No, he got in last night, and I had to work today, so I'll be seeing him here in about 3 hours or so.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, what else do you got planned for the weekend?
Tomorrow, we're going to hang out in downtown Seattle, and we're taking a small cruise. It's actually just a harbor cruise. Brian made it sound like we were, going to go on there and drink, coconut drinks with Lay's, but it's just a harbor cruise. It like kind of puts around the harbor in Seattle. It's pretty nice. We did it like about a month ago, and we had some friends up from Texas. It's a nice cruise, and just on the water and chilling, and yeah, it's cool. It's about an hour long, and you can get drinks and sandwiches and stuff on there, so it's all good.
Wait, hold on a second.
Yeah.
From Texas, you telling me Clary was there a couple weeks ago?
No. He's coming September 23rd, actually, 24th, something like that.
Who else the hell would you be a friend of yours in Texas?
I have family down there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I consider Matt Cleary family. So he'll be up the 25th, and we're going to invade Vancouver, B.C.
He don't sound like he's from Texas.
No. You don't say. He's from across the pond, as they say. He's a transplant.
I wonder if his kid has an accent. Just because from hearing it from his parents.
Maybe.
But anyway, I'm actually going to see Matt myself himself, or I'm actually going to see Matt in I don't even know how long, but sometime next month.
October.
At the UNC show.
Yeah.
Matt was nice enough to spring and bought like the group sitting, and also shout out to Price White 70 for passing along the information for us to order the tickets on time so we could still get these somewhat cheaper tickets. So, anyway, I can't wait for that show. That's going to be badass. Even if that person's not going to be watching. But, Contreras, what are you doing this weekend?
Watching Lost on Netflix.
The whole weekend?
Ooh, that's on Netflix? I haven't seen one episode of that.
It's a pretty good show. I've seen it before. But it's got 120 episodes. I kind of skipped around since I've seen most of them before. I'm on, like, the next to the last season. I got about 20 episodes. I started watching Weeds the other day, Ed.
That's fucking awesome, dude. I love that show.
You don't say.
I'm only halfway through the second season, so I still need to see a lot of it. But
I'm not a big comedy person, so.
Well, it's not really straight out comedy. It's a little bit of everything, but I love that show. It's pretty cool.
It's okay.
To Ed, it's a documentary.
Pretty much, yeah. You'd be surprised.
Are we starting with? Are we going to start with news today, or are we going to start with our little topic?
Let's start with news and get through with that, and then we'll go on to.
Yeah, we'll start with the news since no one gives a fuck about my weekend coming up.
Oh, my bad. Ed, what do you got coming up this weekend, buddy?
Oh, you'd be surprised because I finally, after it's been a while, I finally get my date with Trina Michaels this Saturday. So, yes, it will be an awesome weekend for me. So let's go ahead and get on with the news.
Wait a minute. Wait. We can't just gloss over this. Are you actually going out with her, or are you just going to see her at a wrestling show?
No, I am going to meet her and probably go munch out and then also hang out for a while, then interview her, and then take her to the wrestling show and then hang out at the wrestling show.
Did you say munch out? Is that what you said?
Something like that.
Huh. Trina Michaels, you say. Munch out?
Trina Michaels.
Mm-hmm. See what you did there?
I've seen photos. There are many possibilities of where this could go.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And
I could think of three. I could think of three or four places it could go. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, she's fucking awesome. She's a sweetheart, so I can't wait to see her again.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of her work.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You've heard her.
They noticed that she's the best women's promo in the business right now.
Well, she does them nude, right?
Does he know?
Huh?
Start the news.
Oh, God. Yeah, let's get off of this. Oh, there's another one. So, I don't know what you guys were doing last Tuesday night, but I'll tell you what Matt Hardy was doing. He put on YouTube what looked like a suicide note, and it read, "Goodbye, world. My time here is almost complete. I only have a few hours and minutes. I love you all, regardless of how you felt about me. I'll miss you all. September 23rd, 1974 to August 31st,
2011. Okay. All I gotta say is Matt Hardy has to be the biggest fucking idiot in the whole world. How did he not? I mean, I'm sure that's what he wanted, was for people to call the police and make a big scene, but I mean, what the fuck? I mean, you talk about making yourself look like a fucking douchebag, even more so than you've been looking like the last couple of years. I mean,
that's like the worst thing you can do.
What could be worse than this?
And I'm sorry, you can't read that, and Matt Hardy couldn't read that and say, "Well, I didn't think anybody was going to think it was a suicide note, you dumb shit. Of course that's what they're going to think." You fucking idiot.
Right? You know, hey, Kutcher, are you Facebook friends with Jared?
No.
That guy who calls Big D Show, the guy who's like, "Well, I must really do this."
He says what?
I can't say it. I'm sorry. Anyway, he called our show one time, dude. He's all fucked up, unfortunately. But he posted on his Facebook wall that someone called the police in Carolina, Matt Hardy's killing himself right now. So, I mean, you know, and this is somewhat of a smart wrestling. I mean, you know, he's disabled, but he's somewhat of a smart wrestling fan, and he's freaking out that Matt Hardy's killing himself. I mean, think about all the fucking little teenage girls,
who are
big fans of them and all that shit. They probably were fucking freaking out. I mean,
all the people with muscular
dystrophy. All the fat girls out there with low self-esteem, they probably freaked out.
Oh God, Ed, you killed me.
Muscular delicious.
Shut the fuck up, dude. Serious conversation we're having here.
Oh, this show. Okay.
And we're no worse than Matt Hardy.
Of course. I'm not that fucked up.
He doesn't have MS. Anyway. Yeah, it was funny because I was on the computer and I texted Ed and I was talking to a dirt sheet writer on the phone, and I was talking to another guy on the on chat on Facebook, and everybody was freaking out. And oh God, local police.
Oh,
received...
I was really impressed by one of your sources there, Craig. Luckily for
yeah,
you, I'm not going to bring it up.
Rob Feinstein.
Thanks. Yeah, he thinks I'm hot. Leave me alone. Anyway. Local police received 25 to 30 911 calls. By the way, the first news I heard, it was said hundreds. Apparently that was downgraded. They received 25 to 30 911 calls about it, and they went to Matt's house as well as Jeff's house, and apparently he had posted the suicide note. I posted it for a suicide call. Jeff's wife, you got my muscular dystrophy all up in a roar. I can't speak. Jeff's wife then wrote, ugh, so sick of the BS, I'm paraphrasing. Don't believe everything you read, no matter who writes it or posts it. When the cops show up at our house at 11 p.m. for a suicide call, it's the effing joke is over. Stop trying to work the internet. I guess you got what you wanted. Everybody is talking about you again, but not in a good way.
Oh, I'm sure Jeff just loved with his legal trouble seeing the cops roll up to his house at 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, yeah, because he had to hide his stuff.
She had probably in the bathroom flushing shit.
Coke down the drain, pills out the backyard, feed him to his dog.
This is only like the next day was like Jeff's birthday or something.
Yeah.
You're going mad, ruining your fucking brother's birthday.
Yeah, the 31st was Jeff's birthday, and that's when he said he was going to kill himself.
I mean, he's already an asshole, and that just even makes him more of an asshole for that. I mean, I don't know. So funny about the Hardy Boys is, like, it really, well, I guess maybe it was, but it doesn't really seem that long ago when they were just, like, starting to get their push. I remember getting, like, one of the VHS about Mick, the Many Faces of Mick Foley or something, and basically, between the matches and everything, it's Foley talking to the Hardy Boys, who are like these young, white-eyed guys who look all—I don't want to say straight and narrow, but you know—they kind of look like they kind of got their shit together, and everything was good. And then, you know, they had a nice run where they were on top, and everything was cool. Jeff started getting a little fucked up, and now, I mean, now it's just like they're almost—I mean, the closest thing you can compare them to, except that they're still alive, is the Von Erichs.
Ooh, that's not a good comparison.
And they young,
right?
Look what the business did to them, dude. Young guys, got fame, got money, and just lost their goddamn mind.
I actually started liking Jeff a lot better this week just because Matt became the ultimate fuck-up in the family. So.
You guys saw the mugshot photo, right?
Yeah.
Actually, I haven't. I haven't even seen it.
He's a bad one. Jacked up. Like, one eye is, like, physically almost closed, and the other one's, like, wide open. And he's got a big dot on his head from where he OD'd and fell down the steps. Oh, it's great. Oh, what a hot mess. Yesterday, Hardy released a new video to explain his actions. He explained how the message wasn't meant to be a suicide note and apologized to those he hurt and offended. He also stated it was just part one of a plan to announce that due to being born bow-legged, he has bone chips causing serious pain in his... That doesn't even make sense. Causing serious pain in his back, he will no longer be going to be wrestling full-time. The date, September 23rd, 1974 through August 31st, 2011 was meant to signify the beginning and ending of his full-time career as a pro wrestler. I call shenanigans.
Stop. He was a professional wrestler right when he came out of the cooch, right?
Apparently.
Were you a professional wrestler when you came out? Or was that many years later?
No, that was after watching wrestling for a while, I guess.
Yeah, bad spin job, Matt. Fuck you.
Yeah.
He's in North Carolina. Did you see the video?
No. I mean, I saw the two he posted.
I don't know what the weather is in North Carolina, but he's sitting there right in front of a nice warm fireplace. I don't know. Maybe did so much drugs. Maybe some drugs or something. I don't know. Maybe they give you chills and need a fire or something.
He's
been pretty fucked up for a while. When we were in Arizona, one of my sources went to the hotel around the time when they were having the party, one of the parties, and Matt Hardy was basically just standing there just in a daze. He was so fucking drugged out from pain pills that he could just barely, everything he said was basically slurred, and he could barely do anything. So,
I saw him at the Dragon Gate show, and he was, I don't want to say he was out of it, but he didn't look good. So, I'll go on record as to saying that. So, yeah, he's been messed up for a while.
I hate all this cryptic, like, reborn bullshit that these guys on the internet do. You got to be, like, all inventive with how you're going to announce something. Like, this is the first step in a three-step plan to announce that I'm being reborn or some such bullshit. I hate shit like that. Just either tell me or don't, or shut the fuck up. Damn.
Oh, goodness. Such vitriol tonight.
Plus, like last week we were telling you that nothing really bothers me in the wrestling business anymore. It bothers me because I don't know about anybody else. I'm not used to seeing like what we're supposed to think are suicide notes beforehand. But then
right.
I'm sitting here waiting for something to pop up on the internet and say the guy's dead.
Right.
I don't like feeling like that.
And if you want a good chuckle, if you want a good laugh, go to the YouTube page. If you have it bookmarked and look at all the, actually just look at the quote unquote Genesis one that he put up and look at all the people that just blast him. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of people that posted underneath his YouTube video and they, oh my goodness. There was like, why don't you just go away? I wish you would die. You know, just goodness. People
I think I'm more bothered
did not take
that he actually that he actually posted this, and I would be bothered if he actually killed himself. I actually think it's worse that he posted this. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
That's a new one on me for a professional wrestling, see something like that posted. I never seen that one before.
I also thought it was weird how Brian and Dave just kind of danced around it all week. They didn't really report on it. They just not want to.
I think they just don't want to give them any press.
Just too much tabloid journalism kind of thing? Or
I don't know. They should just stop covering him when it comes to stuff like this.
Well, Matt's had so much to fucking say about, like, the Dirt Sheet writers. They're just not going to give him the satisfaction of even fucking talking about him. When that's what he wants. He wanted them to fucking, he wanted them and everyone else to talk about this, so.
I wouldn't cover him again unless
like, you
he dies or he does something in the ring, you know? It's a great thing.
It was funny, too, because it was my idea to actually talk about the Hardys tonight in our little segment that we're doing later on about gimmick matches. And, Cotrera, you really didn't want to do that. I mean, I was like, let's do, you know, like our top five Hardys matches and remember the past. And you were like, screw that. Let's talk about gimmick matches and they might
come up. And everything.
I mean, why are you so...
Well, I mean, I just don't like, I don't know. I just don't like, you know, just because, like, this is, like, fresh coming off what happened this week. I don't know. I just didn't feel like right, like celebrating them, I guess, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't feel right to me. I wasn't saying, like, I was, like, totally against it. It was just a suggestion. If y'all still want to do it, I wouldn't care. But,
I mean,
it just feels weird celebrating. Let's talk about all of Chris Benoit's best matches the week after he kills his wife and son and himself.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do a show like that, you know?
I don't think it's quite that bad, but yeah.
On a smaller scale, but I don't know. I just kind of disgusted by the whole Matt Hardy thing. I just didn't even want to talk about it.
Fair enough.
Say anything good about him.
Yeah, he's a douchebag.
And he somehow lost Revy Sky in this whole thing. What an idiot.
Yeah, if you don't post shit like that about killing yourself or something, leave me out of it. Just don't put it on the fucking internet. Asshole. Continue.
Continue. okay, Monday Night Raw could be a joint show with SmackDown from now on. World Wrestling Entertainment made the major format change on the 29th of this month to announce, with the announcement of Figurehead Authority. Okay, that's a typo. Triple H and Raw every week would become a joint brand show. The decision came after Raw's rating the week before fell beneath a 3.0. And with the start of Monday Night Football 2 weeks away, which historically takes 10% off of Raw's ratings for nearly 4 months. Another aspect is in recent weeks, the Raw segments featured big names such as John Cena, CM Punk, Triple H, and Kevin Nash have done solid quarterly hours, but the show falters with a secondary names out on the show. The idea of adding SmackDown headliners Randy Orton, Christian, Sheamus, Mark Henry, in theory, would be stronger when it comes to maintaining the Raw audience than the secondary level Raw stars. So with all of that said, my only thing is, if that's the case, and the other guys on SmackDown are considered higher up, why have a brand extension at all and just go back to WWE, Raw, and SmackDown and have both guys, both sets of guys on each show. So maybe we can get and just push on SmackDown, push their champion and their program as the top program.
Okay, here's why I think that's not going to work, Craig. I mean,
okay.
It sounds good. It's like everyone's all, let's get rid of it. Let's do this. You know, it's done. It's been done for a long time. It's not done. There's at least one good thing that comes out of being SmackDown and Raw, and that's the fact that you get to see guys like Daniel Bryan have a match here and there. You get to see John Morrison have a match here and there. You bring those guys over, you're going to have Randy Orton and Mark Henry, unfortunately, and a lot of other guys take time away from Ziggler, Kofi, Evan, and all the other guys that needed exposure and need to get pushed. They're only going to get over once they've been in front of the fans for so long, you know. And you know, it's not gonna be a good thing to do that. It's gonna be more John Cena versus Randy Orton matches, which everyone bitches about.
Okay, but with that said, when you're bringing over the headliners from SmackDown to take the place of Raw's mid card and lower mid card,
It's only one guy, because you know what? A lot of those mid carders on Raw are just as high up as Christian. And who else have you got besides Randy Orton and Christian as far as main eventers on SmackDown?
If you got Randy Orton, Christian, Sheamus, insert name here, taking
Sheamus
a spot
hasn't been
away
anything,
from
a, Sheamus hasn't there, been anything in months. I mean, maybe he's going to make a comeback now that he's a face and whatever, but he hasn't been a damn thing in a long time. Don't you remember he had the stupid little crown on his head? The only person who will make a difference is Randy Orton. So what you're going to do is you're going to have Randy Orton featured more, and you're going to end up back to where it all started with Randy Orton versus John Cena.
Okay, but what would be the big deal of keeping the stories and the segments the same on both shows, but just inserting Raw guys onto SmackDown and inserting some SmackDown guys onto Raw, but keeping the titles as the main focus, which honestly, that's the way it should be with a wrestling company, because they're supposed to be chasing something.
So see, they're going to get the ratings next week, and the ratings go down because of these lesser guys aren't on the show instead of the main eventers. They panic and say, we got to get these assholes off TV and put more John Cena, more Randy Orton, and more Mark Henry.
We all know that Raw's the main show. So if you put guys like Randy Orton and Christian, big deal, because they're the main thing on SmackDown. But if you put somebody like Daniel Bryan, you put a Sheamus on Raw, they're going to go, oh, yeah, I remember those guys. You know what I mean? I mean, there's no reason to have, you know, like the woo-woo guy come over to Raw. There's no reason for it. He has a main program on SmackDown, so that should be where his program is. I don't see what big deal is changing some mid to upper mid-card guys on both shows.
Yeah, so I guess you know, you say it's good exposure for Daniel Bryan to go to Raw, but when he goes to Raw and gets called boring, boring, boring by Michael Cole and gets seen and heard by more of an audience, and then he, knowing who he is, and you know he's going to end up having a job when he goes to Raw, is it really going to help him?
Oh, he's already jobbed on SmackDown. It ain't a big deal if he jobs on Raw.
That's a separate issue altogether. That's an announcing thing. That's not a show thing. That's a Michael
more,
Cole needs to be kicked in the butt
thing.
It's
part of the show. It's still part of the show, so you're going to subject more guys to more of the same treatment.
Yeah,
Michael Cole is just going to have more guys to go crazy on, unfortunately.
You guys all heard the... I know it's a little bit off topic, but you guys heard the commentary, you know, the other day when Cole wasn't burying him. It was great.
Yeah, I know. Why didn't they stick to it? They fucked with us. It was a fucking rip to the internet community. They've been hearing Brian and Dave bitch about it, and that's the feedback they're getting. So they're like, okay, you know, all these smartasses think that's what they want. Okay, we'll give them 1 week and get them happy, and then fuck them, take it away from them.
I've been worked way too much this week by way too many wrestlers
in much worse ways.
Right. Wait a minute. Next up, Kevin Nash benched for medical condition. Punk versus Triple H now set for Night of Champions. They announced CM Punk versus Kevin Nash for Night of Champions. They had a confrontation between the two, and they did an angle later on the show where Nash laid out Punk with a jackknife powerbomb. Then, late in the show, by the way, not in front of the live audience, Triple H confronted Punk backstage and said the board of directors has changed the match from Punk versus Nash to Punk versus himself. The story behind the title change after spending a few weeks building up the match is that, according to those in WWE, there's a medical ailment discovered when Nash was getting his physical in Pittsburgh. The ailment was not released, but it was said to be something that in any other era in wrestling, the match would have taken place. The company made the decision to err on the side of caution, since it is expected Nash will be cleared in the fall and he will wrestle either in a singles match with Punk or in a three-way involving Triple H.
Real quick, what was that taken from? Was that from The Observer?
Yeah.
Okay, don't you just hate when fucking Dave knows something and he doesn't tell you? He knows what the fucking thing is, but he doesn't put it for some reason. I hate when he does that.
Maybe he was having
anyway,
a flare-up.
I mean, what actually could it be? I'm just curious. You know, I'm thinking maybe they just talked to a fortune teller and told him that if he tried to walk across the ring, he'd tear his spot again.
Maybe he's got something that will, you know, eventually clear up. Maybe he's got,
He's got some DECA in his system?
Maybe he has a herpes outbreak. I don't know. Jeez.
Right?
I don't know. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Why can he not go this month, but he might be able to go next month? I have no idea.
Did they get the results halfway through Raw? What the fuck?
Elevator.
That's the part I don't get. I don't know how they didn't know before the show. I mean, they just changed their name. There's fucking mine right in the middle of fucking Raw.
You know, it might be something as simple. You know, Couture, you kind of hit on it there. He it might be, you know, he was picked up, you know, how many months ago, and maybe he tested positive for weed, and in 2 more weeks he'll be able to pass the piss test. I don't know.
You don't get suspended for pot.
You get fined, I think. Or
you just get fined.
Do they start suspending?
You get fined. No, you get fined, but if you keep fucking failing them, they tell you straight out they're going to bury your ass.
Hmm.
Unless they change
okay. It.
I mean, they might have changed it, but that's what it used to be. It used to be just a fine and a little suspension for weeks.
I think it used to be like $2,500, wouldn't it, a fine?
They call it the pot tax.
They call it the pot tax,
and then that's when they started telling people that if you fail so many in a row that you're going to get de-pushed, and I know that happened to a certain someone, and that someone had to switch over to the incense, or whatever you want to call it, the different names for it, the thing that they just recently also banned or added to the list, but a lot of the wrestlers were doing that and passing the test.
It's if he can't go this month and he can go next month or the month after that, why in the world did he let him do so much in the match, or not in the match, but on Raw last week?
Well, honestly, he wasn't working a match, so. He was just doing a move.
It's that way, it looks like they're setting up a three-way. That's how it looks like to me. Like, somehow they're going to add him to it. I guarantee you they're going to add him to it.
So do you think they broke this story to screw with the dirt sheet writers? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I just have a feeling that, well, I mean, just the way it's set up. I mean, he's still getting involved, and now he's pushing Triple H. I mean, doesn't that tell you, make it look like it's building to a match?
They may not trust him in a singles match and maybe go with a three-way. So, you know, you have Punk and Hunter in there, so could make
that's
up for it.
I'm saying he could just occasionally help Triple H. You know, he doesn't have to take no punishment. They could just do something like, you know, push him out of the ring, and then, you know, he'll be out for a while, leave it, let Hunter and Punk just work the match, and he just does stuff when he needs to help Hunter, you know.
That would be the best way to cover him, because let's be honest, he's going to be totally worthless. I mean, he can do the big guy moves, but he can't bump and he can't sell. And to put him
and
in a three-way or a tag would be the best idea.
He blew up in a minute in the Royal Rumble. I mean, he was over his tongue, but we all remember him hanging, like, over the fucking middle rope, fucking just sucking in some air.
It's a long
right
walk
thing,
to the ring.
He just, like, grow the rest of his mustache back in instead of that pencil thin thing.
Right?
He looks like Michael Hayes.
How come I'm not the only one that noticed that? That I was like, why are you sporting the old Eddie Guerrero stash, dude?
Yeah, he doesn't even look like Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
You know what's weird is I never really considered him one of like the, you know, a great promo. I mean, it was mainly, you know, Scott Hall of the group that was really the good talker, but he was always pretty decent. And he looks like a rank-ass amateur out there every fucking week. It's like, what the fuck happened to him?
Punk is eating his lunch on the mic. It's great.
Although Punk was pretty bad this past Monday, though, with all the vomiting and that bullshit. That was horrible.
That was really stupid. That was stupid written comedy for him.
Yeah, I was fascinated by possibly seeing him against the Great Khali, but they canceled that match.
Oh, thank the Lord. I saw Khali, you know, just a couple weeks ago. He ain't moving so well.
Yeah.
It would be the understatement of the year. Shall I continue?
Continue.
Go ahead.
Our last story, Sin Cara, the saga continues with WWE. The original Sin Cara returned on 8/20 at the house show in Tacoma, Washington, that yours truly was able to attend. You can check out my pictures on the pro wrestling page. I took some great shots of Sin Cara.
I know one's been on the front page for a week.
Oh, I know. I got to get him to change that. I'm at the pro wrestling page. Anyway, he returned after serving his 30-day suspension. During his interim, Hunico had been in the role. However, on the 23rd, both Mystico and Hunico were brought to Calgary for the SmackDown tapings. Mystico was sent home, and Hunico was put in the role. Hunico then worked Slater, and Vince McMahon blew his stack because, well, they botched a ton of spots, and they actually ended up coming to the ring three times. Let me see here. It was the match. Yes, it was a match with Heath Slater. It was this match. And not anything from the first two that aired on SmackDown. Mystico has not been fired, although he is and has been on thin ice since July. However, at the Super SmackDown show on Tuesday, they teased a Sin Cara heel turn when he kicked Daniel Bryan in the face after beating him. Turning Sin Cara would make no sense since he is a huge merchandise seller. My son actually has one of his shirts. So this may indicate that the plan to bring Mystico back for a Sin Cara versus evil Sin Cara feud.
That sounds like that makes sense to me.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought as soon as he attacked Bryan after the match and Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Apparently, we found out on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com, cheap plug for them, that is, in fact, the case. He's being brought back. That was just on the update today.
You know, what I find funny about this thing is, like, just on the Brian and Vinny show the other day, Brian's just talking about how he hates wrestling now, and this is one of the things that he hates is his hosting car thing. This is, like, one of the greatest fucking storylines of all time because it's fucking a shit storyline that we're basically all following. I mean, the cause is so fucking absurd. I mean, they're pissed off because the dude failed a steroid test that they probably told him he needed to get on steroids in the first place. Well, they didn't tell him that, obviously, but, you know, it's probably hinted that he has to look good for TV. And so he comes, he serves his suspension, right, no problem. And then he comes back, and because he continued to walk around like the star that they probably think he is, but in reality he is, that he wasn't humbled, and that's why they're sending him home, because he didn't, I don't know, fucking go and kiss Vince's ass right after that or something. I mean, it's just fucking stupid. And then it's fucking, they send him home because they think they got a replacement. They can put anyone in the fucking mask. And what fucking happens? That dude has to wrestle 3 fucking times because he fucking can't step up to the plate and fucking hit a home run. The motherfucker just blew everything. So now Vince is like, okay, I'm pissed off at this motherfucker for being an asshole. And then this fucking idiot had to fuck everything up. What the fuck do I do now? So it's like, I don't know. I just love following the storyline. It's fucking awesome. And now knowing that he's coming back, you know, that's a plus.
A lot of fucking going on there.
Pretty much.
Jesus Christ. Man, we don't have a delay.
Ed likes to curse.
I've been
not talking about wrestling, so I'm getting it out of my system right here.
To be honest, since Misko's come in, I didn't think what's so special about him. Sorry. I didn't see much difference between him and Hunico, you know, when Hunico was in car, so whatever.
You know what? I actually liked his match that they did on the Super SmackDown show. I thought it was pretty good, actually. I didn't have a problem with it at all.
Brian and Dave are right. If you really look at him, you can see the difference. There's one dude who's fucking scared to death to be out there in front of everybody. And there's one dude who doesn't give a fuck. I won't even say it to John complaining. Who just doesn't, who thinks that he's above everyone in there and everyone should be up there cheering his ass. So you can see that just in the way he carries himself. But you're not impressed because he hasn't really done a real lucha match, which he's really still, you know, he still has to adjust. It takes time to adjust to the American way. And you just haven't seen him do what he can do. And then plus, you're not really the type who would probably even like lucha in the first place. So, I mean, I can understand why.
I hate all Mexicans in general, so you're probably right.
Yeah, that's why you probably eat our food all the time, you fucking redneck motherfucker. But anyway, I mean, it's lucha, you know, it's not for everybody. So I can see where a lot of people probably aren't like, you know, what's the big deal or what's the difference?
I've never been the biggest lucha fan. It looks too choreographed to me most of the time.
Well, I love lucha, so I mean, like, to me, I can see the difference in the two dudes.
It was funny. I was watching Monday, and who did he wrestle on? Who did Sin Cara wrestle on Monday? I know he wrestled Jack Swagger.
Jack Swagger,
right?
Jack Swagger, yeah.
It was funny because he sent Swagger to the outside, and Swagger was like on the side of the ring, and so he points and he says, and he points to the other side of the ring to tell Swagger to go to the other side of the ring so he can do his spot.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Yeah, he was very confused there for a few minutes.
Yeah, just saw him. He looked at Swagger and said, that way. So.
Yeah.
That dude, you talk about being given a golden opportunity and just fucking blowing it.
Who? I don't think he's blowing it that bad. I think he's okay.
He did okay the first, like, couple matches, but, I mean, come on. When Vince McMahon himself makes you go wrestle 3 fucking times.
I was more stunned he came on live TV 2 nights in a row after that.
2 nights in a row. That's right.
Grew up at the SmackDown
table. Well, look how simple the match, look how simple, I didn't I actually didn't see the one with Daniel Bryan, but the one with Jack Swagger, they kept that shit simple. And right now you're just talking about how he doesn't know where the hell he's at, and he's pointing to, you know, the guy to get in place.
Maybe he was afraid that Slater would sexually assault him, and that's what blew the spots.
Maybe, but
he's going to grab his wiener.
Well, I don't think he was going to do that, but I'm just saying, you know, he was given a good opportunity, and he blew it.
That's embarrassing. Had to reach out three times to do a match. That's I would just call it a wash and wouldn't even air anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, after the third time when your boss tells you to go down there and try it again, I think I just grab my bags and leave.
I think they only
aired, like, the third match they did. It only went 2 minutes, and that's all they aired. They just threw out all the stuff from the other two matches.
If I could ever pick a wrestling show to be at or backstage, that would have been the show, just to be around Vince McMahon when he's fucking having to do that. I mean, could you just imagine the steam and the fire shooting out of his eyes? I mean, he must have looked like the devil. But anyway, continue.
And that's all the news we have for today. Let's get into our topic, which is our favorite gimmick matches.
Well,
everybody jump at once.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I've been trying to think about, because I know we're probably going to end up talking about all the modern matches, but I just remember all the crazy shit, you know, when I was younger, like Texas Death matches and Indian strap matches, you know, matches that didn't have politically correct names, and brass knuckles matches, and you know, strap matches, and, you know, they used to have a lot of cool stuff, but then you always had a lot of bad shit, like the baby bonnet matches and a lot of stuff like that. So I've been trying to think of, like, a lot of the old shit instead of, like, some of the new ones. But there's been crazy shit going on for basically ever since wrestling's been going on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the first matches that I saw when I was a kid were, you know, like Wahoo in a strap match, and who can forget the Rock and Roll against Ole and Arn in the cage from Starrcade. That's probably one of my
Magnum
favorite matches
Foley,
ever.
I Quit match.
Yeah, the I Quit match. Yeah. That was amazing. And then, you know, when we get into the newer modern times, of course, Shawn Michaels brought us the ladder match, and Mick Foley and Undertaker brought us the Hell in the Cell. And we even had one of the most ridiculous things that I've ever heard of that actually turned out to be not so bad, and that was the Hogpen match with Henry O. Godwin and Triple H. And
that was good.
What a ridiculous thing to have for a match, and it was pretty darn good.
Yeah, because it was pretty brutal. I mean,
yeah,
it was pretty cut up and everything.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite.
I remember Jerry Lawler saying, "Everything brown in there is not mud."
Right.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite gimmicks was, I guess it's not really a gimmick match, but it was more like a gimmick that kind of led to, like, these impromptu matches week after week. And that was the 24/7 rule when Crash Holly was the hardcore champion.
Yeah,
and they went to the fucking playground and were in the like the little thing with the balls and just
the ball
fucking,
pin.
The ball pin and fucking going down slides, and you had hoes were pinning him, and Joe C was kicking his ass, and I mean, just all kinds of crazy shit going on. I love that run that Crash Holly had as the 24/7 hardcore champion.
Even though it led
to
one of the worst matches of all time with Gerald Briscoe and Pat Patterson in the evening gown match at King of the Ring.
Oh, man.
That was cool.
Yeah, that was another gimmick match, was the tuxedo match that has been done a few times.
They're stupid.
Yeah, pretty dumb. Pretty dumb.
You know, going back to the Briscoe Patterson match, you know what was really surprised me, because the match was horrible. Yes, it was. But I was actually expecting a very good match because all the stuff
right.
they had, like, all the other stuff, like, they've done, or, like, they still, like, fucking, they're still in their prime. There's a few times where they make those comebacks on, like, the Mean Street Posse, but they made, like, a couple comebacks where they were all fired up, and, I mean, they looked awesome in a lot of stuff. I mean, I really thought they were going to pull something off, and it ended up being shit that it was.
You know what's not even considered a gimmick match anymore, but honestly, you know, Paulie brought in the three-way dance, the triangle match, as a gimmick match.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a staple now. I mean, they do them all the time, but, you know, Paulie and ECW brought those in, and what a crazy idea that gotten a lot of really great triangle matches in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I think the best that I ever saw, there's two of them. There was one at Vengeance one year with The Rock and The Undertaker and Kurt Angle for the for the WWF Championship, and I think that was where Rock won and then lost the next month to Brock Lesnar, and the other one would be the Triple H and Shawn Michaels and Benoit at WrestleMania 20.
Yeah, phenomenal. Yeah, it's easily one of my favorite matches. That's just a great, great match.
Like, you think back to the 80s, and okay, you're not going to see Ric Flair in no match with two guys. You know, not going to be Ric Flair against, like, Sting and Barry Windham against one another in, like, some kind of three-way match. It just sounds so goofy. But then, you know, wrestling got goofier than the match happened.
Yeah, and then, like, basically you could kind of give credit for ECW kind of, you know, one of their big things in early on was that three-way dance that they had.
Yeah, that first one they had was Shane Douglas, Terry Funk, and Sabu, and the night the line was crossed, that was like one of their famous matches went an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like when they say ECW got, like, established or whatever. So, you know, that you got to get, I guess, that match credit for that. But, I like three-ways. One thing about three-ways is it's just more action because you don't have to do as many wrestles. You know, you don't have to put the dude in the abdominal stretch to catch your breath or stuff like that. You know, you just one guy gets blown up, he takes the powder, and the other guys go for a while, and then you just keep switching until, you know, the match keeps going and doesn't ever really slow down.
I do hate the overused finish of stealing the pin, though, when another guy hits his finish. I hate that.
Yeah. You know, three-way matches can either be really, really good, or they can be pretty bad. There's been, I think there's been more of bad than good over the years.
They're pretty good when you get, like, some high flyers in there. They can do a lot of stuff
yeah.
like that. They make for good matches, so.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, sometimes they're pretty horrible. They got to have a special kind of, you got to have guys in there that know how to work that. And, you know,
yeah.
like you said, know how to take the powder when the two guys are doing spots in the ring and you know, there's been some ridiculous spots, like three guys lock up together for a three-way lockup. You know, they got the stacked up suplexes where, you know, Austin Aries almost killed himself last night. Things like that. But like the triple sleeper, always one of
yeah.
my favorites. Actually, double sleeper, but anyway.
I think I've seen like Kurt Angle three-way. I think I've seen like a double ankle lock or something with somebody. Kurt will have ankle lock on somebody, and somebody will go back and the other guy will go back and grab Kurt's ankle. So
did they do something in Dragon's Gate where there were like six different submissions going on at the same fucking time?
Oh yeah, all the time. I was thinking of I can't remember who exactly it was, but Jericho had some guy in the walls, and then I think it was Benoit. He came in and put the crossface on the guy.
That was awesome.
So,
yeah.
Like I said,
that three-way
it can either be
with Steve Austin, right? That sounds right. At the King of the Ring one year, he had the Walls of Jericho on Austin, and Benoit put the crossface on, and I think the ref had to break it up because he couldn't, like, tap out because he didn't know who to award the match to.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome. All right, who's next?
I throw a match out. Probably one that's going to be, most people, I Quit match. I think there have been a lot of great I Quit matches, but I think probably the three greatest would probably be Magnum and Tully Blanchard at Starrcade 85, Ric Flair and Terry Funk at the Clash of the Champions, and Bret Hart and Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13. But I know I'd like the Ric Flair and Terry Funk match out of all those. I like that one the best.
That one did have the most drama.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Funk's leg was like being to break in half the way he just had it cinched in, and they did the awesome spot where he whips him. He slides across the table and then hits his head on a chair that's sitting there, and it's just like one of those awesome matches. And they had the microphone right there so you could hear everything, and Terry Funk's going, "Do you want to say I quit before I pile drive you?" And so he picks him up and then he pile drives him, and it's awesome. Microphone adds a lot to those matches sometimes.
You're forgetting one though. You're forgetting.
I know what you're
going to
say.
Mankind.
Yeah. I knew you're going to say that.
Honestly, when I think of those four matches, it's actually hard for me to pick which one I like the best because, I mean, Telly and fucking and Magnum was fucking awesome. I mean, their hatred shows so much in this match. It's like you almost actually think he's gonna kill him with that fucking stick, you know?
Yeah.
And
trying to
fucking,
like stab him in the face with this jagged edge of this chair.
Yeah, you could really feel. That's a match where you just could feel the hatred, and it's one of those matches where you could really lose yourself and get into the match, you know, and actually, you know, be a mark for the match. And then, like you say, everything you said about the Ric Flair Terry Funk, that was awesome. And then, I don't know, I consider this one of the greatest matches of all time, and that's the Bret Hart Stone Cold one because was such a perfectly executed fucking match, dude. How do you fucking turn your top babyface and your top heel and you switch him in one fucking match? And, you know, it's just, I mean, and the way they did it is like Stone Cold lost the match, but he didn't quit. I mean, he's there just with blood pouring out. I mean, you couldn't ask for a more perfect time and perfect cut or, you know, whatever. I mean, that blood just added like so much to it. I mean, it wouldn't have been the same if he wouldn't have been bleeding, you know? I mean, that match is just, that was like, if you want to call a perfect match, to me, that was a perfect match.
That one did get 5 stars, right?
Yeah, it was five stars.
Yeah, that was just perfect. Like, just you had the perfect story. And I don't know, I love any time you turn two guys in one match. I always think that's pretty awesome when it comes off really well.
Because a lot of times it don't work.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. The last, this is might even be totally off the wall, and not a lot of people saw it. It was Orton and Cena. They had an I Quit match last year. And that was great. And those guys had wrestled so many times that people forget that was actually a really good match.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And going back to one that's, you know, probably looking back with all the concussion shit now, you know, and then after watching Beyond the Mat, you know, how brutal it was seeing his kids freaking out. But that Mick Foley Rock match was something else. I remember being on the edge of my seat watching that match, and I actually liked the ending of it, you know, where they had to fake I Quit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I still enjoy that match, but it's like, I don't know, it's kind of hard to watch, but I still think it's a great match.
I was just going to say, I was in a room with probably 10 other dudes, and we weren't saying a thing watching that match. We were just like, is this really happening? Because he was killing him with that chair. We thought we were going to see a murder that night.
Yeah, it was
brutal.
Pretty devastating. It was. And then it just got worse when you see fucking Beyond the Mat, you know? It went from a 10 on the brutality scale to like 100.
Right. I'll throw out the next match here. Ladder match. Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon had probably the most famous one at WrestleMania 10, and they brought it back. Help me, Couture. They brought it back. With those
SummerSlam 95.
SummerSlam 95. And through the years, we've seen some amazing ladder matches. Probably one of my... That's probably my favorite gimmick match. Maybe Hell in a Cell might be up there as well. But, yeah, that's probably my favorite gimmick match is ladder match. And, you know, who can forget the No Mercy match between Edge and Christian and the Hardys? Yes, I'm bringing him up. That was an amazing ladder
match.
That's
a match that made both of those teams stars.
Absolutely. And, you know, just doing little things like Matt or Jeff leapfrogging the ladder and dropping a leg from, you know, just, I don't want to say it's an easy bump, but, you know, just because he leapfrogged a ladder and dropped a leg, it just looked amazing. And then WrestleMania with the Dudleys and the Hardys in that ladder. Well, it's actually a TLC match, wasn't it? But just
with the triangle, they call it a triangle ladder match, but they use it all in there. You can call it a TLC match if you want to. No matter.
Yeah.
Well, basically, that's what ladder matches have become. Ladder matches have pretty much become TLC matches for the
most
part.
And that was really the last great tag team feud I remember in WWF.
Oh, yeah.
That three-way feud that they had for a couple of years with those guys. I mean, that was awesome stuff.
Yeah, that was good stuff. I mean, it was a staple for WrestleMania for years, you know, the Money in the Bank, and now it's even got its own pay-per-view. So, you know, they put a lot of stock in the ladder match.
Okay, the scariest thing in the ladder match is, who was it? It's Armageddon 2006. When Joey Mercury got his face crushed.
Yeah, that was brutal.
That teeter-totter spot, that's a bad spot to do.
Wow.
He just got creamed.
For a second there, I was like, what are you talking about? And then, boom, just the image of him getting smacked with that. They did it like, what was a teeter-top spot, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and then they did it, and you just see his face swell up right in front of the camera. Oh, man, that was pretty nasty.
I mean, JBL was appalled doing commentary. Of all people to be appalled, JBL was. And I said, well, that's
You know what's kind of what's funny, though, about the ladder matches is the ladder matches you remember the most, for the most part, are the ladder matches where they did the least shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the earliest ladder matches that I've seen on WWE TV is there's actually a Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels match. It looked like it was like the main event for like a Superstars taping or something like that. And it's actually a pretty good match.
A videotape. One of those, you know, when they used to tape the matches for the videotapes and stuff like that.
Exactly.
That was supposed to be, originally they were going to do that match at SummerSlam 92 in Washington, D.C., Shawn and Bret in a ladder match, but then they changed it to Wembley with Bret against the Bulldog for the Intercontinental title.
Hmm. Interesting.
And the first time I ever heard of a ladder match, it sounds so stupid. Okay, you put the ladder in the ring, and you're going to hang the belt, and you climb up the ladder to get it. I mean, it sounds so absurd. First time I heard the idea of a ladder match. I said, this is going to be stupid. But no, it wasn't.
Yeah, it turned out to be a winner.
I was always funny. You remember when they had that stretch in ECW where they had the ladders or legal matches with the Eliminators and Sabu and Van Damme?
Yeah.
I said, the ladders are legal. Aren't they always legal?
Kind of, huh? I was just going to say. I was just going to say, I remember watching, I can't remember what, I think it was on a Heat Wave, maybe 98. It was Sabu against the Sandman. And the finish of the match was Sandman on top of the ladder, Sabu tipping the ladder over, dumping Sandman outside onto a table. Which sounds like a great finish, except in execution, the Sandman totally missed the table and just splatted on the concrete below because they didn't use those pretty blue mats. You remember they used to say that all the time? Just horrendous-looking finish to a match.
And they wonder why ECW were on drugs or drunk. they needed to kill the Penguins doing stupid shit like that.
One of the great better finishes to a ladder match I've ever seen. They had in WCW they had Jeff Jarrett and Chris Benoit for the U.S. title, and they had this gimmick ladder that Benoit brought out, and his gimmick by the heel. So when he started to climb and all the rungs broke.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember that.
I thought that was fucking hilarious. And so then Jarrett would come in from behind and knock him out, and then he got a real ladder and went up there and won the title. I thought that was a tremendous finish.
Wasn't, like, one of the very early ladder matches was Dusty and Tully, wasn't it?
Yeah, for the $100,000 at the Great American Bash.
Yeah, there was barbed wire around the ladder, as I remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was...
They did not do many ladder spots like you would think,
you don't say.
Like you would see today.
this is a match that I wanted to bring up because to me it sounded pretty absurd. And I don't know, in some ways it actually kind of looked cool when they actually did it, but it's not like they actually were able to do anything because of what was going on. But you guys remember the Inferno matches of Kane and Undertaker and
yeah.
Kane and Lindy? He set MVP's ass on fire.
Yeah.
But I mean,
yeah, those are no good.
It kind of looked cool because every time they do a spot, they fucking fire those suckers up, and it actually looked impressive. But they really couldn't. They had to either be right in the middle of the ring or something. I mean, they didn't really do too much. But
I don't remember.
You talk about a match where some shit could go wrong real fast.
Oh, yeah. Well, they got that idea.
You're doing the suicide dive over the fire to get a cane in one of those matches? That was awesome.
Oh, yeah, he did. That's right.
Remember when Paul Bearer was, like, controlling the switch that I guess, the gas switch where you could turn the gas up and the planes would go higher. And so Taker just got pissed off, and he went from one side of the ring to the other and did that suicide dive. He does it every WrestleMania on Kane on the floor.
They got the idea from Onita, and I've seen quite a bit of FMW, back in the day, and some of those matches were just god awful. Okay, most of those matches were god awful, but
did you see the one with the Sheik?
The one with the Sheik and Sabu, wasn't it, with the fire match?
Yeah, I haven't seen the match. I've only seen the pictures that were in the magazine, and
it was
those
too high. They had
were
to call
great.
The match off or something.
Yeah, those things, those flames were huge. I mean, it was like, they were inhaling the smoke too. I mean, it was that they could have caught the whole building on fire. Those flames were so big.
I'm pretty sure it was an outdoor stadium.
Of the, they had a fire incident at ECW Arena one time, and I think it was the infamous fire chair that Mick Foley had devised. And this towel and like it's been soaked in like kerosene or something, he used the tape to tape the towel to the chair. I guess not thinking that when the fire starts, like the tape isn't going to melt or something. So he goes to swing the fire chair, Terry Funk, and then the towel goes flying. It goes out
in the crowd.
And then for some reason, all the lights go off in the crowd, and I know Terry Funk got burned pretty bad, and that was almost the end for Terry Funk.
One of the fans was trying to put it off and burn his fingers, and then he wanted to sue or tried to sue him or something.
Yeah, he tried to sue him after that. It was like several years after that he tried to sue him, and I think he lost.
Yeah, they had some.
I always
love
when they throw fire in professional wrestling. I thought that was awesome. You know, like the Sheik or Jerry Lawler or somebody like that.
Yeah.
They had some ugly incidences in the ECW arena back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Well, they had some ugly people in the ECW arena back in the day, too.
That's very true. And speaking of that,
what the fuck is all with Balls Mahoney? I mean, could you be a stupider person than to want to go through night after night, go through a flaming table with thumbtacks? I mean, why you got to have the thumbtacks? The fire's not enough for you?
I'd rather go through the fire.
Yeah.
Plus, he used lighter fluid most of the time, and right when he hit, usually the fire would go out. So.
Usually. Not all the time. Usually. speaking of ECW and the ECW arena, I was brought back to another gimmick match that was like one of the most cringeworthy things I've ever seen in my life, and it was Terry Funk and Sabu in the barbed wire match.
Ooh, God, yes, that was nasty. I think the end of that got fucked up when they all got tangled up in the barbed wire.
And, yeah, that was
I know
so
there was a
brutal
part in the beginning of the match where Sabu ripped his arm open and he crazy glued it shut or something like that. He used to do that all the time.
Yeah, he actually, I have this on videotape, actually, from them. He did the spot where he jumps off the chair and like does a crossbody, but he only hits him with his legs, you know, like he's doing a leg lariat kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he gets caught up and underneath his armpit, it just rips from there to the top of his bicep. And you see him holding it, there's blood just pouring out, and you see him, tell the ref, you know, something. And the next thing you know, the ref's in the, trying to duct tape his arm back together.
God. And that's really, it was even worse with the kind of outfit he wore in those barbed wire matches, because it would get tangled up in that barbed wire, like, really easy. He got tangled up at the end of this one. And, finally they got the fucking, say we were all just so wound up in the barbed wire, they finally just had to, you know, do, like, a quick finish or something. They had to bring out, like, wire cutters and stuff, and they had to cut all of the barbed wire off of them. It was disgusting.
Yeah, Sabu totally breaks kayfabe, and you can hear him talking, which he never did. And, get me out of this. And, they're cutting his hair out of the barbed wire, and just brutal.
Cut you out of there. What the fuck were you doing in there in the first place? I mean, gosh, I don't know what's wrong with some people sometimes.
Well, he likes to wrap barbed wire around his body so he can do a leg drop or something. I don't know. I swore he cracked himself on one of those things or something on the barbed wire.
I think he did, actually. I think he did. I was telling this to Ed the other night when we were talking about our topic. One of the things I saw from FMW was Headhunter A versus Headhunter B in a barbed wire brick match. So they had bricks at ringside wrapped in barbed wire, and at one point, letter A throws one at letter B, and it just kind of sticks in his arm for a minute, and then it just slowly falls off. You know what I mean? It just kind of dangles, and flesh is ripping, and that was pretty ugly stuff. So if you ever see a barbed wire brick match, you know, if you're booked for that, run.
It's almost something I don't really want to see. God, that sounds horrible, man.
Oh, like Big Japan back in the day, they had like
a few of the pay per views. They had some fucked up shit, dude. I mean,
scorpions, cactus, and piranha,
explosions, C4.
Yeah,
I mean,
I've heard of some weird things. Like, this isn't like Japan, just in like some garbage promotion where they'd have the pit of the of syringes, the HIV positive syringes outside, and she got thrown in or something like that.
You sure that wasn't a juggalo match?
Or a match where they had a mouse trap set or something like that?
I remember
those.
I
know I've heard of a match like that. It was a guy.
Yeah, but let's go ahead and change it to a total different direction. I kind of had asked Matt what is up. What his favorite gimmick match he ever worked was. And he said that when he was in Europe, you know how they do the rounds in Europe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he said if it went to like a 5-round draw, that they would have an overtime. And the way that the overtime worked was that you got a point for every time you took or knocked your opponent off his feet. And he said it was awesome because, you know, the crowd would actually go like super crazy for that. And he said that was like his favorite thing, so I guess that would be kind of cool. I mean, it's kind of weird, though. It's hard to imagine wrestling with rounds. It's just, I can't put my brain around it.
I remember in Stampede Wrestling, didn't they used to issue cards if you broke the rules or something?
Yes, they did. I've got a feud stampede. I think it was just like in soccer. I think it was a yellow card.
I don't know, if you choked somebody or used a closed fist or something like that, you got issued a card. And if you got, like, three cards, you got DQ'd or something.
That sounds very familiar, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then last night before his worst gimmick is something we can go ahead and talk about because it covers a wide variety of different things. And last thing said is, I don't know if he was in it or he said it was just a show he was on, but the worst gimmick he ever saw was the Viagra on a pole match.
Billy Gibbons and Shane Douglas. I remember that.
Yeah, and then just think of all the shit that Vince Russo was put on top of a pole. From tequila bottles to Judy Bagwell to fucking...
Judy Bagwell was actually worse than the Viagra.
I mean, that's just so absurd. It's actually, in a way, awesome that they had Judy Bagwell on a fucking pole.
I'm more appalled that Judy Bagwell was even in the business and then she was up on a forklift somewhere.
At least she's like a judge or something.
I don't know.
But, yeah, there's been some, and it actually, like, I remember, like, back in the day, like, the coal miner's glove, and it was kind of, in a way, that was kind of like a pole match, but.
I was going to ask you if you guys had those.
At what?
I wasn't, you know, I thought that was just something that was, that we had in Portland wrestling, was the coal miner's glove match. I thought maybe we might be the only, you know, people that actually had those.
No, we had it because...
No, they had them all over. They had them, like, in Mid-South and all the other...
Yeah, because like, they also had it in the Mid-South, and then the Sheepers kind of had... they had a glove in Southwest, so...
I remember the coal miner's glove match with Sting and Jake the Snake at Halloween Havoc one year.
Yeah.
He took the Cobra out, and then... the camera's right on him, and he's putting the Cobra on his face, and the Cobra's not staying, so he looks at the Cobra, and then he places it back on his face, so it looked like he's biting him. It was weird. That's probably why I got fired.
Just a quick shout-out to Haphazard. He actually posted a link to the fire match with Sheik and Sabu against Onita and Goto the thread on the board, and he also asks, have you seen the shark cage match that is on the Wrestling Gold DVD?
Yes, I was going to bring that up. And when I heard the name, you hear Shark Tank match, you're actually, wow, that sounds kind of cool. Not realizing what the fuck a Shark Tank is until you see it. And basically what it is it was a match, it was a Cheapskate Strongbow against one of the Kangaroos, I think. And basically it was one of those old-style cages that they would drop into the ocean in the 70s, you know, just metal bars, not that wide, just so like one or two dudes could get in there and just they could film the sharks.
Like from Jaws?
Like from Jaws, exactly, straight out of Jaws. So you get these two guys in there. So basically you got these two big dudes in this little shark cage where they can barely move, and somehow Cheapskate Strongbow still kind of did his war dance and made his comeback. And won. And
what's the point of the shark involved?
It's the definition of something that is just so bad that it was fucking awesome.
There was no shark involved or anything.
And all they could do was just like little chops or little like hits. I mean, just they could barely touch each other. I mean, it was hilarious. You've seen it, Couture, right?
I've got the Wrestling Gold. It's been years since I've watched it, so I can't really get it in my mind right now, but
that thing was awesome.
another match that could be considered on some of it's the worst. It's one of the worst ones, but it can also be considered like pretty good because for one famous match, and that's like the scaffold matches, which when I first heard of them sounded absurd, but I mean I think probably the best one was probably that Midnight Express Road Warriors at Starrcade 86 where Cornette blew both his knees out. Big Bubba didn't catch him like they catch the girls at the football games.
Now, was that really a good match, or are you saying that because of what ended up happening?
It was more because of what happened afterwards, but, I mean, it was just more of a spectacle.
you know?
I'm trying to think if there was actually ever, like, a really good one. I've only seen clips of Superstar Bill Dundee and Coco Beware, but from the clips, it looked like there was a lot of action, but like I said, it was only clips, so you have no idea. But not a lot of stuff goes on in a lot of scaffold matches, you know?
I saw the one in ECW with Tommy Dreamer and Brian Lee where they took all these tables inside the ring, and then they constructed this rickety fucking-looking scaffold. It looked like it was about to fall down. I think later on in the night, didn't like Terry Saturn do an elbow drop off of it or something like that?
Yeah, and yeah, he did.
What
you know? What made that scaffold match good is they barely used the scaffold until the finish. You know, they brawled all around ringside and through the crowd, and then finally up to the scaffold. Of course, Tommy Dreamer, you know, gets choke slammed and you know pretty much dies on the way down, but. That's honestly, that's what made the scaffold match good was they didn't use the scaffold until the finish.
I remember seeing a Jack Victory shoot interview, and he's talking about, I think it was when the Powers of Pain had left. So they basically, they had a bunch of, they were supposed to be in a bunch of matches, both with the Road Warriors and scaffold matches. But since they left, they kind of just threw in the random mess Russian team, which was Jack Victory and the Angel of Death. And they talked about how they'd have to argue about whose turn it was to get thrown off the scaffold.
Did you ever see the Vic Grimes and New Jack scaffold match from XWF? I think XWF. So sorry. Anyway,
he does. I saw like just like the real quick clip on YouTube of I think him falling off the thing. I think New Jack literally tried to kill him. He was pissed off because he hurt him in the ECW when they fell off like that goal post or something or the basketball.
It was not basketball hoop,
yeah. And landed on top of him or something.
He's told a lot of people that he was trying to kill him.
And
I like to be told that by many people that he's told them that he wanted to kill Vic on that.
Now, you remember the catch of the flag scaffold match at the Bash 91? With it was Steve Austin and Terry Taylor against Bobby Eaton and PM News, and you had to capture your opponent's flag to win the match. And nobody, like PM News are going to take a bump out of the fucking scaffold.
Oh man, I remember PM News, dude. Do you remember when Vader slammed his face into the ring post and half his face swelled up?
Yeah, that was awesome.
And he was crying. Oh man. Poor PNU.
Yeah, he did it to himself.
I guess to me, one of the greatest gimmick matches of all time is because it's had a couple of the best matches. Well, I actually didn't say best matches, but still the most memorable matches were the first two Hell in the Cells. I mean, the Undertaker Shawn Michaels one is fucking just awesome. And I'll never forget, like you mentioned, you and your friends were watching the I Quit match in silence. I just remember watching Hell in a Cell, Foley, Undertaker, and I'm watching it with my friend Art, and we're just there, you know, just watching the match, all cool, just watching the match, and then fucking Mick Foley goes flying off the cage, and my friend, who was only like a partial friend, and he followed it, like, you know, if I was watching it, he'd come over to watch it, but he was a hardcore fan. I just remember him turning to me with his eyes just so wide open, saying, Was that for real? Did he mean to do that?
Yeah.
And I just was like, I didn't even know what to say. I mean, I was speechless. I mean, it was just, I've never seen anything like that, you know?
That's Joey Ryan at that SummerSlam when Sheamus and Mark Henry went through the barricade.
Yeah.
That's about how I looked.
Yeah, yeah. The reaction.
I just had my hands on my face, and I kind of leapt to my feet, and Jesus Christ. Little did I know what was to come.
You know, I didn't see that. I didn't see it live. I had it recording, and I actually was watching it later, and my folks had come over, and my dad hated wrestling, you know, all my life anyway. And I'm watching this thing, and he's kind of, what are you watching? And blah, blah, blah. And then Mankind flies off the top of the cage, and he's just like, holy crap, you know. It's like, hey, Dad, this is all fake. It's not a big deal. you know.
And then when he went back, then Jim Ross, this was like his best call in history. I think because he actually feared for the guy's life.
And right.
So he's all
like, stop the damn match.
They killed him. They killed him.
Somebody stop the damn match.
And then he's smiling. He's smiling. Oh, man, that was just.
And then you got like Terry Funk's out there because he's worried about his friend. And Vince McMahon's out there. He said, what is this fucking nut done? And
Terry Funk loses his tennis shoes on the chokeslam.
He got chokeslam out of his tennis shoes by the Undertaker.
Yeah.
Terry Funk,
and when he came
like,
through
he
the...
Up, he woke up and saw a tennis shoe and was like, what the fuck?
And when he went through the top of the cage and, I mean, like a chair followed him down and bashed him in the mouth. I mean, it's just... And the thumbtack came out. Like, I needed something to put a period on this sentence. You know, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it was brutal.
I was exhausted after watching that match. I was literally exhausted.
The dumbest thing, you know, Taker is killing mankind, and he's just flying all around. And how does Taker hurt himself? He jumps from about 10 feet and almost breaks his ankle coming through the cage. Meanwhile, Foley's been thrown off the top of the cage. He's been chokeslammed through the cage and to the hard mat. And Taker almost rolls his ankle, you know, dropping about 5-10 feet.
Well, it's still
Foley's in there. He's got this gash in his under his lip. He's sticking his tongue through, but you can't really see it because of his beard. And looks like he's got a tooth hanging out of his nose. Just looks like a dead man.
That's like a magic bullet that killed Kennedy. It's like, how the fuck did his tooth get in his nose, dude? I mean, I just remember, like, his tooth? It's like, how did it get there? Someone explain how that happened.
I don't know. I just wish I could have. You know, I just remember reading in his book, you know, Vince came over and said, thank you for everything you've done for the WWF, but I don't ever want to see anything like that ever again.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Well, they've done some crazy shit, but a lot of it's been gimmicks. So, I mean, I guess they haven't done anything that crazy. But real quick.
Did anybody want to tell me wrestling's fake? I say go watch that match.
Yeah, that's it. Watch that one or the I Quit match. What matches with Mick Foley where he almost dies and you might have a different opinion in wrestling. But real quick, everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com along with a lot of other shows. So everyone check out AngryMarks.com. And Couture, go ahead and pick another match.
Another match. I'm going to go kind of – this isn't like really like an extreme type match, but it is like a gimmick match that I've always enjoyed. And that's I love elimination matches. Like the like the Survivor Series style stuff. I guess you can consider this a gimmick match, so you know, when you get like through the Survivor Series and you get like 10 guys on each side, it's like you gotta eliminate everybody from one team. I always liked them because you usually get some really good wrestling matches out of that.
Yeah, definitely.
I like them when they're more on pay per view than on regular TV, because, like, didn't TNA have a match where, like, everyone lasted, like, 30 seconds? You know, if you can get to that time, they don't look like idiots. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, like, if you could have a 10-man elimination match and give them 20, 25 minutes, you know, you can get some good stuff out of it. But you get 10-guy elimination match and you give them 4 minutes, you know.
I think probably my those first two Survivor Series are, like, two of my favorite pay-per-views of all time. Just because they have
who can forget the Young Stallions fucking winning, surviving, dude?
Yeah, and those are probably two of my favorite elimination matches was the 20-man tag at 1987-1988 Survivor Series with I think it was, let's say it was Young Stallions, Killer Bees, British Bulldogs, Rougeaus, and Strike Force against the Bolsheviks, the Demolition. Valentine and Dino Bravo, the Hart Foundation, and the Islanders. They went like 30 minutes. And I think the Killer Bees ended up getting the final fall with the when they did the mask gimmick on the Islanders. That was a great match.
Right.
Yeah. You know what else was a good match? The women's one. The one with the Jumping Bomb Angels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
See them. I think actually
awesome.
Donna Cristianello died last week. She was in that match, I think.
Hmm.
Wait, who again?
Donna Cristianello passed away last week. Was on one of those. Was on one of those teams. The 87 Survivor Series.
Oh, okay. Well.
You know, we didn't. We said we were going to talk about, you know, our favorite gimmick matches. I'm going to throw out one that was pretty darn awful. It was called the Tower of Doom.
Mm-hmm. Which one?
Now, which Tower of Doom are you talking about?
Oh, all of them. It doesn't matter. All of them. They were horrible.
Anything with a tower was horrible.
Now, which one are you talking
about?
David Arquette one?
The best one that I've seen is the one with DDP, and he's actually in a movie, you know?
Oh. Yeah. Didn't they have that? They had the three-way with Jeff Jarrett and DDP and David Arquette when Arquette
yeah.
was the world champion.
And it was something like that. It was some kind of contraption that was really high up.
Yeah, remember
yeah.
it was the Kemper Arena where Owen Hart died, and at the end they had
That's
Mike Awesome
right.
throw Canyon off the top of the cage?
That's
that
right.
Classy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, always thinking.
Yeah. And then you got the one with Hulk and Macho
oh,
Man,
God.
where they pitch on him, like the Horseman and fucking Zeus and Bane from Batman.
It's like two people against 10 people.
The final
and they whipped their all asses. And then Brian Pillman worked everybody because he was supposed to be in the match, and wasn't.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
left the ring thinking they won, but they forgot to pin somebody, so they had to run back and pin Ric Flair real quick. That was like the worst match ever. That's
yeah.
terrible.
Yeah, that was no good.
I tell you, one of the greatest worst matches ever was that Chamber of Horrors match at Halloween Havoc 91.
Oh, that was
yeah.
awesome, dude.
That was awesome, but it was so bad.
They had those like masked dudes in the coffin that came out, and they just get their ass kicked.
And they were going to flex into the electric chair, and
oh,
Angle was supposed to throw the switch, and
right,
they got this whole thing, this rinky dink setup, and the cage is shaking so much, so the switch comes down when it's not supposed to.
Yeah,
the cage
right.
just pushes it back up until it's time. It was so stupid, but, I mean, that's like one of the funniest matches of all time, that one.
Who was in that match?
It was Big Van Vader, Cactus Jack, Abdullah the Butcher, and the Diamond Stud, Scott Hall, against the Steiner, Sting, and Elegante.
That's right, he tells me.
Oh, jeez. How about the...
I wonder what Vader thought when he had himself or else he got there.
How about the Thunder...
Hold on. I got to talk about this match
okay.
more. Abdullah the Butcher deserves a freaking Emmy for the way he sold that fucking execution. That was the greatest thing ever. His fucking edges shaking all back and forth with blood coming down. Oh, my God. That was awesome.
And the poor... they had to take away part of the stage to fit the cage down in there. And they had the guys bringing the part of the stage back for the ramp so the guys could go back up to the dressing room. And Abdul was doing his, like, he's gone crazy. And this poor fella, he just walks up there just trying to put the ramp back together. And he just steps on his head. Just crushes. Just steps right on his fucking head. I said, poor fella.
How about the Thunderdome cage match? With, it was Funk and Great Muda and Sting and...
Ric Flair.
Ric Flair.
Oh.
Yeah, you're right.
It caught on fire.
It caught on fire. There was a fire because it was electrified. But really,
yeah.
It was just the lighting rig. But, it was supposed to be electrified.
Well, they had all this Halloween crap, like I don't know, just it's, I guess like some sort of cobweb looking stuff, and you know, just like Halloween decorations up around the cage.
Yeah.
It kind of looks stupid. And then Tommy Young saw the fire was up there, so he runs up there, starts putting it out with his hands. Then it's kind of out, and then Muda goes up there and sprays it with the mist to put it out. It's pretty funny. I just remember Sting was swinging around on a rope in this match.
Oh, man.
And how about in TNA, they had, when Raven was doing his flock gimmick there, help me on the name, it was the Raven's Hardcore House of Fun matches or
Clockwork
something
Orange,
like that?
Maybe?
Clockwork Orange House of Fun match.
Something like that.
Something like that. It basically was just a hardcore match, and they put up a half of a cage and then put weapons on the cage.
You know, we could do a whole show. We could do another whole show just on bad TNA gimmick matches.
Oh, yeah. The barbed wire Christmas tree.
Yeah, we
should
We shouldn't even talk about TNA anymore, and let's just say that for another show, because that's a whole other show by itself.
Reverse Battle Royal.
Oh, yeah. There's so many.
Yep.
Well, how about the Stampede, the Spring Stampede, where you had to brawl in outside of the cage? It was like a battle royal into the out of the cage.
Well, what Dusty Rhodes was one of the last two people in the cage. I knew he was going to win.
You don't say.
That was the stupidest thing I've ever heard of, Bunkhouse Stampede inside of a cage.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you had to throw him out, get him out of the cage. I mean, what's the... I mean, it would just make it that much more difficult and that much of a harder match to watch. You got to push him out of a door or throw him
over
the top.
Didn't like Luger take out Arn and Telly at the same time or something?
Yeah.
And then I remember, you know how they have that weightlifting belt? Did you see when the part in the buckle, the little pointy part, got stuck in Dusty's arm?
Ooh.
Mm.
It was Dusty and Ivan Koloff got all fucking bloodied up in that match. I mean,
yeah,
it wasn't that. I didn't think it was that bad of a match. It's just it was so goofy the way he had to win it. But I mean, it was a pretty brutal match.
Like
from what I remember.
Bunkhouse Stampede in New York City. That's a it's out of a steel cage. That was so stupid. That was a terrible show.
I did enjoy the you know how you had to qualify to get in there by winning like those battle royals.
Mm-hmm.
They actually had showed a couple that were pretty cool. I mean, it seemed like a good idea when it was starting. It's just that the final outcome was just too goofy. But, you know, I had high hopes for it at first.
Yeah. I think just throw out one of the best gimmick matches of all time. I just kind of one we hadn't talked about, but kind of an obvious one was the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, good call.
That's
favorite match of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the pay-per-view I look forward to the most of the year besides WrestleMania. I mean, I love the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. And that, and also I should have brought up War Games is one of my favorite gimmick matches, too.
Oh, totally.
Well, let's talk
totally.
About War Games.
Best idea ever, I think.
Yeah, let's talk about War Games, and then we can go ahead and start to wind the show down. But War Games, I mean, that's just the perfect concept. I mean, you have 4 to 5 guys on each team. For the most part, you have, like, main eventers were always in it. I mean, like the first ones, you had the main guys. You had Dusty, you know, the Road Warriors against the Four Horsemen. And then you always had it, unlike TNA today, where you always had it where it was never a question that the bad guys were always going to have the advantage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have baby faces come in and make their comeback and then back and forth. And then, I mean... some of the best matches I've ever seen of the War Games, you know.
The only way to win the damn coin toss is to turn heel.
One of my favorite ones was the one with the Freebird and the Samoan SWAT team and Dr. Death.
Yeah, that was 1989.
Yeah, I mean, that was awesome. Michael Hayes and Paul Heyman were awesome on the outside.
Yeah, Michael Hayes gets down to the end of the match, and Michael Hayes is the last guy.
I gotta go.
And he says, "You're in next. I gotta go." And he's saying the same thing. I mean, like he didn't know he was gonna have to get in this match at the end of the
match.
So.
You gotta go. That was awesome. There was an awesome one where I think it was Barry Windham, Steve Austin started. Dangerous Alliance one. That
yeah,
was fucking badass. That was awesome. They've had so many like now.
I think 1992 War Games with the Dangerous Alliance against Sting, Nikita Koloff, Ricky Steamboat, Dustin Rhodes, and Barry Windham. I think that got 5 stars in the Observer as well. That was an awesome match. That was my favorite.
That was good.
I love the spot where they had Arn's head stuck between the ropes. The ring.
Yeah.
And they just like got his leg and holding his head. You can't see his head because his head is. That was awesome. And then and then another one that was pretty good, even though Sid Vicious is calling his spots right in front of the camera, was the one where he tried to kill Brian Pillman.
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't take that cage into consideration when doing that power bomb.
Oh, man.
And then he did it twice.
But was it the second one the worst one?
I can't remember which power bomb was the worst one. I think maybe it was the second one. I don't remember.
I think it was the second one. All I remember from the first one is like the coolest spot. They had Animal had Tully Blanchard in his arms, and
like
they're doing like a bear hug, and he's flinging him into the cage each time he's got him in a bear hug and he's ramming his face into the cage over and over again, just holding him there. And he'll kneel down and then flip him back and he hits the cage and he's still holding on to him and, you know, Blanchard's like blading in midair, you know. Phenomenal.
In that 1991 War Games, you got Sid Vicious and Rick Steiner in the corner. And Sid says,
yeah.
Is he there? Is that there? Yeah. You ready to go? Yeah,
right,
I'm ready.
Let's go.
Okay, go. It was just so bad.
They're calling spots right and left.
I've never
really
seen
loud.
That. In all the years that I had watched pro wrestling before, you know, I never, ever saw them call a spot. Looking back, you see the little tricks that they did, you know, hiding behind their mullet or their hand or whatever. But to that point, that was the first time I ever, ever realized that these motherfuckers talk to each other in a match. I just blew my mind. I was like, what the fuck? Like, oh, geez. But that was an awesome match, though.
Yeah.
I'll throw out just as for my honorable mention as a great gimmick is I always like the Elimination Chamber every year.
The first couple were really good. I think the first one, just the simple fact that they don't do blood now, it really does take away from cage matches and Hell in the Cell and all that stuff. They need to start doing blood again. There was something just recently where, it was the cage match that was on SmackDown this week. If there would have been a little bit of blood in that match, it would have been 5 times better.
Yeah. I don't see why they don't just do it like on a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Or something.
And if it happens, let it happen. I remember it was a pay-per-view here in San Antonio a while back. I don't remember which one it was, but it was a match, and they basically stopped the match to go work on a guy and kind of close him up.
I hate that shit.
Why do you want to stop the show like that for?
Is that show?
I don't know. It just kind of kills the whole thing. Whole flow of the
match. Didn't like Batista like refuse to get Batista gets busted open one time and they sent the guys to clean him up and he was like, get away from me and just kept going with the blood.
Sounds about right.
Well, I tell you what, next time they do, you know, use blood, it'll be a pretty big deal. Because they haven't done it in years.
Yeah.
Very true.
That's why they need to do some matches now, you know. I don't know, is it really that big of a deal? It just doesn't seem that big of a deal. But not saying you have to have blood and everything, but it just seems natural. And in one match like that, you'd have some.
A cage match meant somebody or even both guys were guaranteed to blade and bleed.
Yeah.
You'd always have a spot where they break the dude. Break. I don't know how many times I've seen a Von Erich break Ric Flair's face against the fence and bloody them up. You know, it's just a spot you do in every match. I mean, that's what they have to realize. People expect blood in these kind of matches, you know, and
yeah.
It actually does kind of take away from the matches in general when you have one after when you have two in one show and no one's bleeding in either one of them.
Now that most we hope for we can get is like somebody gets a bloody nose or a busted nose or a busted lip, something like that.
Yeah.
Or you like
yeah.
You
there's
get like
stuff a match for a busted nose or anything like that. That's just
like Randy Orton the last pay per view where he got all fucked up from the trash can and
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we've actually been gone like over 15 minutes over our regular time, so I guess we can, like I said, we'll do a whole TNA bad gimmick show on its own later
sure.
on. But we'll go ahead and start to wrap down. Craig, anything you wanted to talk about before we go?
You know what? I'm good. I've done talked about everything. I got to get in the shower and get ready to get out of here. So. You gents have a great, great Labor Day weekend.
Yeah,
oh, it's Labor Day. Weekend, Labor Day. That's right.
Yeah. 3-day weekend, baby.
I haven't been invited to any parties. I'm guessing I'm not very popular.
I'd invite you if you live close.
I'm kidding.
Craig gets to hang out with the token black guy of the Empire, so have fun with him.
Yeah.
Like Alex Goff's whole problem with me is he blames me for Rodney not liking him. But it's not my fault Rodney doesn't like other black people, Alex. I'm sorry.
Let's be honest. Rodney's like one of the whitest black guys I know.
Alex Goff is too. That's why they don't get along. They're going to fight over who's going to be the Uncle Tong of the group. But, you know, don't blame me, Alex. It ain't my fault. But, Katrina, you got anything you want to talk about before we go?
No. Fuck Matt Hardy.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I don't have too much to add, so everybody come back next week. I guess if we don't have an interview, maybe we'll do the worst TNA gimmick matches next week.
Well, we don't have to label it the worst TNA gimmick matches. We just label it TNA gimmick matches.
Basically, yeah. Craig already hung up.
She didn't
know for the theme music. But anyway, everyone have a good time. I know hopefully we'll be able to add, because I'm taking my voice recorder on my date with Trina Michael, so I should be able to get an interview. So hopefully we can add that to the show somehow next week. And I'll get that posted as soon as I can. So everyone, I'll check that out. So that'll be pretty cool. So everybody, if you're in San Antonio or Southwest Texas, head up to the River City Wrestling Show tomorrow night. And, should be pretty cool. I think Alyssa Flash is also on the show, so it should be a good show. So everyone, if you can, check that out. And if not, we'll be back next week, and we will talk to everybody then.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's shit. Let's go hook him up! Tonight.